How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are always by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up at WrestlingObserver.com. We have tons of news to talk about today. Unfortunately, our top story when we come back from the break is the passing of Sir Oliver Humperdinck. He had been battling cancer for some time and passed away last night. We'll tell you a little bit about his career, talk about his life and times when we come back from the break. It's a very short segment here, so we'll get into it when we come back. But the preview of the show today, in addition to that, last night, the crowning of a new superstar, John Jones, the new UFC light heavyweight champion, absolutely destroyed Mauricio Shogun Hua to win the title. Went from a guy that had been training for 3 years in mixed martial arts, 23 years old, looked at as a top prospect, to now being looked at as a guy where people are saying, who is going to beat this man? We'll talk about that, plus the Uriah Faber fight last night. What is up next for both men, including a friend versus friend fight coming up, or perhaps former friends? We'll talk about that, plus the next season of Ultimate Fighter, a mega fight in UFC that now may not be taking place. We'll tell you about that, plus preview next Saturday's show here in Seattle. I will be heading out there to that live. We'll talk to you about the UFC Fight Night show, which is coming up. There's a brand new ROH champion. We'll tell you about that, what went down, talk a little bit about the match and the ROH shows this weekend. Also a huge weekend for AAA and CMLL down in Mexico. Head-to-head big shows. How did they draw? What were the big matches? Did Super Porky get shaved? All of these big results will be talked about here on this program. Plus, of course, all of the other news, including a preview of the WrestleMania show, which is coming up in just a couple of weeks. When Rock is going to be back on television live. The whole situation with TNA and Jeff Hardy, which was a complete debacle. And there's more. Boy, is there more as it pertains to Jeff Hardy. So a lot to talk about today. We're going to kick it off after the break. Mike is traveling back from UFC, so we'll talk about that show from a live perspective. Coming up next, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And for those listening to this, perhaps on the internet, streaming it on WrestlingObserver.com. We have a ton of ways to listen to the show. Wanted to throw them out here in case you're unaware of different options. We are going to be up most weeks on Sirius Satellite Radio, channel 125. So if you have Sirius, check it out in your car, in your home, wherever you have Sirius Satellite Radio, channel 125. 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on Sundays. You can also grab the TuneIn Radio app. It's a 99-cent app. You pay for it one time. Get it on your iPhone, your iPad. It's free on the Android, the BlackBerry, probably a number of other phones as well. And once you get the app, just search for Sports Byline USA. You can listen to the show live on your iPhone, iPad, Android, BlackBerry. That's the TuneIn Radio app. Check that out, of course. If you're in San Francisco, 860 AM, 50,000 watt station. You can also check for local affiliates up at WrestlingObserver.com and Sports Byline. Also listen online on the front page of our website. And if you must, you can listen in on your phone by calling 704-625-9950. All of this is up right now at WrestlingObserver.com if you missed anything I just said, so head out there and check that out. Mike, you're on your way back in the car from UFC in Newark. We'll talk about that show in a moment, but very quickly, thoughts on the untimely passing of Sir Oliver Humperdinck.
Yeah, it's a very sad situation there, and obviously everyone knew it was coming, as we talked about, I believe, 2 weeks ago on this show, him going into hospice care. It was just a matter of time before it happened, so hopefully he went in the most peaceful way possible. But, yeah, a very sad situation, really because of his age. He was not an old man. And a guy who was a lifetime wrestling fan from Minnesota. Most people will know him. Obviously, the older fans are going to know him for the work he did in Florida as part of Sullivan's stable. And for the amount of time he was there, for fans who are a little bit more middle-aged, they're certainly going to remember him from his time in WWF with Bam Bam Bigelow. being a part of the great thing they used to do in WWF when they would have a guy come in, there would be this jockeying for who was going to manage him, and the big surprise when Bigelow picked Humperdinck, and after that, the time in WCW with the Fabulous Freebirds for a little while there is Big Daddy Dink, but from what all accounts, an all-around good guy, one of those guys who you never hear anything bad about, and was just a lifetime wrestling fan who was able to get into it, was successful, and was not bitter towards it when it was over, and just a sad situation in the way that he broke down, but hopefully now at peace, and just the best goes out to his family and all of his friends.
We did an interview with him about a year ago, and a really nice guy. And later on today, I'm going to put that interview up for free on the front page. So if you never got a chance to hear that interview, it's going to be up at WrestlingObserver.com. You can go up there and listen to him tell stories about his career. A really nice guy. So that's going to be coming up later on today. You can all check that out. UFC in Newark last night. Mike, you were there live. And tell us about John Jones, the new UFC light heavyweight champion.
You know, it was kind of killing me this week. Obviously, there was more pressure on John Jones in the last couple of weeks leading up to this show, with a lot of microphones in his face, a lot of interviews, a lot of things on his mind, obviously. On relatively short notice getting ready for this fight, but, I mean, this was a big, big deal for him to be, you know, basically, quote-unquote, coming home to New York. He's getting a title fight. He's only 23 years old, and it was kind of annoying me a little bit during the week where there were people that were kind of going after him for not being able to, you know, he wasn't answering questions properly and he didn't seem comfortable. He's 23 years old, got thrown into a situation where, you know, this is a big deal. Obviously, there's a lot of spotlight on him, but it was like, you know, give the guy a little bit of time. He wasn't going to be a Brock Lesnar type over superstar just because he was, you know, getting the fight. You know, it's going to take him a little bit of time on how to deal with everything, and I know people got a little bit salty about that because he was getting salty about having to answer the type of questions that he did, but this is all a big learning curve for him. So it didn't really surprise me when he came out, and there were not a good deal of booing, and I'm not sure how it came off on TV, but it was probably a 60-40 reaction positively for him, but the boos were very, you know, clear. By the end of the fight, forget it. 100% of that crowd was cheering him and were completely impressed by him, and they ended up booing Rashad Evans when he went into the cage. So just an incredible performance for John Jones, and just, again, it's tough to imagine that the guy has only been training for 3 years, you know, and he's only 23 years old. It's an amazing thing, and because of how he fights, his style, his wingspan, and everything else, just chalk it up to another guy in UFC as far as champions go that look absolutely untouchable. Cain Velasquez, Anderson Silva, George St. Pierre, they have an impressive roster of champions where the biggest question is, who is going to beat these guys?
You know, it's funny about Jones getting all upset about the various questions. The question he kept getting upset about was people kept asking him, if you win, are you going to face your buddy Rashad? And it's funny because, you know, when you ask, say, Randy Couture about somebody, you know, are you going to fight so-and-so if you win this fight? And I listened to a conference call once, and I'll never forget because it was Dave Meltzer, actually, had asked Randy a question. I forget who he asked him about, but Randy was just like, you know, I'm not going to talk about it right now. I'm not looking past, I think it was Brock Lesnar. I'm not looking past Brock. It would be stupid of me to look past Brock and this and that. And there's this pause, and Dave says, thank you. And there's like 4 seconds that goes by with nobody talking. And then Brock just goes, well, that was a stupid question. And I always laugh at that. And, you know, you never ask Brock, you know, nobody would ever ask Brock, like, you know, what do you think about facing this guy after this next fight? Because Brock will just tell you that you're an idiot and you should never ask a question like that. And, you know, Randy will just blow it off. But, like, John Jones is such a nice guy that he wasn't telling everyone to just shut up about Rashad. So people keep asking and asking and asking and asking. And finally he tells people to shut up, and then they get mad at him. And it's just like, you know, stop asking about Rashad.
And that's one of the biggest things, too. It's not even the guy. I mean, no offense to a lot of people who cover MMA and things like that, but it's not like a lot of them went to school for journalism in most cases. So, I mean, you have to understand it from the other guy's point of view when you're constantly asking the same questions. Now, Jones is going to get better, and it's going to be the people that he's with are how to answer questions like that, how to deal with things and get out of them with a little, you know, more charm and things like that. But, you know, you keep beating the same guy with the same question over and over and over again. Yeah, it gets a little annoying after a while where it's like, you know, how many times do I have to answer this? Now, the flip side of that is, and, you know,
we talked
about this week on the web. Yeah.
The flip side is they were right.
Well, the flip side is they were right, but also the flip side is the whole thing with camps as well. Every time you have a Greg Jackson or somebody where it's like, hey, you know, our guys can't fight our guys. You know what? That's something that's going to have to be worked on more and more. I know Dana said, yeah, no matter what, it's going to be the winner of this fight was going to face Rashad, and that's fine. But, you know, a lot of these camps have to realize, too, you're not in a team sport. I know you are team training, but it is not a team sport. It is a single-man sport, and unless you're fine with missing your chance to fight for a title or missing your chance to fight for a payday because you don't want to fight your buddy, these questions are going to keep popping up, too, and they're going to have better answers for them because it's like John Fitch last year. It's a show in New Jersey where he asked somebody asked him a question about fighting Koscheck. He said, well, I'm not going to do it. And Dana White just looked at him and said, I guess you don't want to make any money then, do you?
Yeah.
I guess you don't really want to fight then. Stuff like that is going to have to go away.
Yes, we are getting to the point where there are fewer and fewer teams. You know, it's not like you've got the United States and Canada and England and, you know, you've got like, you know, three or four dozen fight teams all over the world with just a couple of guys. You're getting to the point where there are a few big teams and there's a lot of people training in a few places. And when it gets to that point, friends have to fight each other. Teammates have to fight each other. And unfortunately, it's going to happen, and last night I felt bad for John Jones in a sense. I almost felt, I'll just put it this way. I am totally behind Dana White in the sense that this is the fight that obviously people want to see because John Jones was bombarded with questions about Rashad. You know, this is the fight that people are expecting if John Jones won, was Rashad versus Bones Jones. So the fight's going to be made. It just has to be made. And you don't ask the guys if they want to fight. You just say, if Jones wins, he's fighting you, Rashad. And I totally agree with that. But when Jones gets his win and they threw... I actually have to go to a break. I cut myself off right there. I'll talk about this after the break. What can you do? Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. I have been doing this show for 12 years now, and I still cut myself off at the break. Can't win them all. Anyway, what I was saying before we went to the break in regards to UFC in Newark last night is I am all for Dana White telling guys, you gotta fight. I know he's your teammate, but this is the fight people want to see. This is the fight that makes sense. If you want your title fight, Rashad, you're facing your friend Bones Jones. I am totally 100% behind that. Now, with that said, I felt bad for Jones last night when he won the title. He's in there. It's the biggest night of his life. He's got the championship. He just beat his idol at 23 years old. He's in there being interviewed by Joe Rogan, and they cut over, and there's Rashad in the cage. And they bring Rashad over, and they set up the fight. And, you know, Jones just looked like, he looked like his dog died. He looked so sad. And I thought, you know, this fight's not taking place in June. It's probably not taking place in July. Jones just fought 6 weeks ago. He wants a vacation. He wants to get married. He wants to take a little bit of time off. It's probably not happening until the fall, maybe even the winter. So could you not just let the guy have his celebration tonight and set the fight up on the next show? You know what I mean? I just felt...
You know what? I got the impression, I don't know, and I could be wrong about this because I didn't hear the press conference afterwards. I almost got the impression on that one because of who it was. Now, obviously, if you have a fight coming up or if there's been, you know, a lot of heat between guys, I can understand them doing that because it is a great thing after a fight to have that face-to-face of who you're going to face next. But with that said, yeah, I thought it was kind of... And it was almost like, because all of this stuff all week has centered around a lot of it of, well, you fight your friend, which, again, how could they be friends? You know, teammates, fine. I don't know about how close they are as friends or anything like that, but fine. You know, if they're friends, they're friends. But it was almost like Dana White was like, you're going to go in that ring to guarantee everybody. It shuts everybody up. They're going to see it. It's not just going to be words. You two will fight each other. There's the face-off. Now there's no way out of this thing.
Yes, it did, in a way, feel like the poor guy was ambushed. But you know what? I don't know. It's hard to say what I would have done in the same situation, because if they had not done this, I mean, quite frankly, the fight has to happen, you know? And if that's UFC's idea that we are going to put this fight together and it's going to happen, then maybe you did have to ambush John Jones, because Rashad is completely down with having this fight. I mean, Rashad has made it clear that, you know, I'm taking this fight. I have no problem with this fight. I don't think Jones is excited. In fact, I'm almost positive Jones is not that excited. But if Jones is the guy that has to be convinced, then, you know, maybe you do have to ambush him in front of the world, because he's not going to say no. And quite frankly, you know, had they not set this up immediately after the fight, then you know what the press conference would have been afterwards. It would have been every single person repeatedly asking, are you going to fight Rashad? And maybe they just didn't want to give him a chance to say no. Maybe they just wanted to say, you know, you're going to fight. We're going to set it up here. You're not going to like it. And it sucks we have to do it this way. But, you know, this is a message to everybody else. If your friend is next in line, then you're going to have to fight the guy. That's just the way it's going to be. So I kind of felt bad for the guy, but in the end, as Dana White has said a million times, this is a business. This is the fight business. Sometimes you have to fight your friends.
And it's just the whole thing with that anyway, when it comes to what friends are and everything. And I know Greg Jackson, I believe, I think it was earlier on this week, said, okay, if they do happen to fight each other, I'm not going to corner either, man, and that's fine and everything too, but the concept of having friends in a business where it's a one-on-one, it's a ludicrous thing. I mean, I love my brother to death, but you know what? If we were, it's like the Klitschko brothers in heavyweight boxing the same way. If there's enough money on the table, yeah, obviously I don't want to hurt anyone or kill anyone, but I don't want to do that with anybody else either. I'm there to win a fight. So I would fight my own brother if that's what it took. If that was the fight that was out there, that would make us both the most money. I've played team sports my whole life. I've done individual sports as well, but it's just the concept of friends in a fight sport, in boxing or in mixed martial arts, absolutely drives me nuts.
The other big story on last night's show, did you hear about the John Jones thwarted robbery?
Yes, actually, it was right where we were walking into the building. There was a TMZ, somebody had a TMZ report about that, and I don't really know the details on it, you know, much other than, yeah, he foiled a robbery, which, you know, I tell you what, things cannot be going any better right now for the image of John Jones.
What happened was about, Dana said 2 hours, but I think it was probably a little bit more than that. I can't even remember when I first heard about it, but it's maybe 3 or 4 hours before the show. But regardless, John Jones decided he was going to go to the park to meditate. He likes to meditate before his fights. So him and Greg Jackson and I forget the other guy, but they all take a taxi cab to this park. And as they're getting out, I guess the taxi driver says, you know, this is a rough area. And Jones says something to the effect of, I don't think we need to worry about that. So they get out of the taxi, and he's sitting there in the park, and all of a sudden they hear screaming or whatever the case might be, and an old lady, apparently some hooligan, had stolen her GPS and took off, started running. So Greg Jackson and the other guy take off to chase this guy, and Jones is just sitting there like, oh my God, what just happened? And Jackson is screaming at him, you know, don't... Just stay there. Don't run, because they don't want him to get hurt. So Jones is like, I ain't just going to sit here. So eventually he takes off after them. And Jackson and the other guy have gotten a good head start after this GPS thief. But Jones is long and lean and an athlete, and he just tears on past him. And he's gaining on this guy, and apparently the guy with the GPS looks back, and he just sees John Jones sprinting after him. And you can imagine what this must be like for this poor guy. shouldn't call him a poor guy. He stole the lady's GPS, but in the end, he was a poor guy. So he looks back, and John Jones just says, "You know I'm going to catch you." And sure enough, he caught him, and he took him down, and apparently he'd done some, I guess he'd taken some criminal justice or something like that, but he took him down, and he put him in a hold that he had learned, held him down, and Jackson, the other dude, caught up with him and took a photo on his cell phone, held him down till the cops arrived, and yes, a couple hours before the UFC, John Jones thwarts robbery, goes on to win UFC light heavyweight title. And I haven't actually even looked around today, but I presume there are headlines in various places about this heroic act on the part of young John Jones.
I just, absolutely, I was thinking the same thing too. It's like, well, I don't know what park in Brick City that he would have went to that he would actually want to meditate at or have the ability to meditate at, but whichever one it was, thankfully for that woman and her GPS, that was the case. But again, I mean, he's such a, he seems to always be smiling. He looks like a million bucks. I mean, now he's the heavyweight, you know, the 205-pound champion. It just, things could not have gone any better for him. Ambush or not last night when it comes to Rashad or however those feelings go, what a great night for John Jones. And what a great night for the UFC, too, because we stayed at the Marriott last night. As we were leaving today, there were a bunch of guys with bags on their way in for the 145 and 135-pound competition for the next Ultimate Fighter, and at least we know Uriah Faber's got a good chance to be one of those coaches.
Most likely that's what's going to happen. He won his fight last night against Eddie Wineland, kind of a rough first round. How did you score round one?
I actually gave it to Wineland the first round, but Faber obviously turned it on the second and, you know, cruised through the second and third round.
Yeah, I gave the first round to Faber. It was very close, but it doesn't really matter. Faber turned it up in the second and third round and got the decision win. Not happy that he didn't submit or knock out Wineland, but what can you do? He got his big win, and most likely, yes, heading on to coach the next season of Ultimate Fighter with the 135-pound champ Dominick Cruz. And what are your thoughts on that fight? Can Uriah beat the new and improved Dominick Cruz?
It's still going to be a tough fight for him. I've been in the, you know, on the Faber bandwagon now for quite some time. I will continue to be on said bandwagon. I do like the fact that he told Dominick Cruz to hide his wife, because he's going to be ready for war. But, you know, Faber, as far as, you know, it's a great, great thing, actually, that he was able to win that fight. I mean, Wineland, if he could have kept it standing, you know, obviously there was a puncher's chance there, but Faber just too good on the ground. And for him to be, you know, for them to be the Ultimate Fighter, to lead into a pay-per-view, which would be the first, obviously he had the one before, but the first big flashy under the UFC banner pay-per-view, I think it's going to sell incredibly well. Faber is very, very popular. Got a huge pop when he came out, and everyone in New York, you know, seemed to know who he was, obviously. If nothing else, the AMP commercials and the fact that he's been out there, he's incredibly marketable, good-looking guy, well-spoken, chicks dig him, you know, and guys want to be like him. Just the old thing when it came to wrestling, you know. The guys want to think you're cool, and the girls want to get with you. That's the perfect way to be a fan favorite, and that's certainly what he was. So that's actually going to be hopefully a great fight, but I am actually taking Faber in this, although I seem to be in the minority.
Yes, you are. And Dominick Cruz is a fighter, just drives me absolutely nuts. I've mentioned this many times before.
Too wonky of a style for you still with his punches.
It's too wacky, and to me, I don't know. I've done some form of martial arts my entire life, and I'm all about going slow and trying to have perfect technique. And when I see somebody going really fast and not having perfect technique and making up for not having perfect technique by going really fast, my thought is always, okay, this works for you now, but come back to me in 4 years when you lose some of your speed, you know? So I don't know when that's going to happen with Cruz, but eventually it's gonna catch up and bite him in the ass. And I guess we'll find out if it happens with Faber or not. But this will be, don't get me wrong. Cruz is he's a tough guy to beat right now. And it's going to be tough for Faber to figure out the puzzle. But I think that I think that his technique is such that he will figure out the puzzle. So we shall find out. We'll be back in just a moment. Coming up against a break again. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline, Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour and a half, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. And for the latest news and information in pro wrestling and MMA, always head to WrestlingObserver.com. Daily news updates. We have tons of radio shows. We literally do 15 to 20 radio shows every single week. So if you love this show and you only get to hear it once a week on Sundays, well, you're missing out. They're all available at WrestlingObserver.com. We talk all of the news. Sometimes I've done as many as four shows in one day. We have a number of other radio hosts as well, including Mike Sempervivi here. We cover wrestling, mixed martial arts, the history of wrestling, interviews, the whole nine yards. It's all up at WrestlingObserver.com. It's only $10.99 per month. And if you sign up, you not only get access to the 15 to 20 brand new shows we do every single week, but you get access, no further charge, to our full archive. Every single show we have ever done is available in the archives dating back to 2005. That's tens of thousands of hours of audio, thousands and thousands of shows. So if you've got a commute, if you like listening to stuff at the gym, if you like listening to stuff on your computer while you're at work, well, you're never going to run out of stuff with WrestlingObserver.com. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. Mike, we were wrapping up our talk about UFC in Newark. Any final thoughts before we move on?
Madison Square Garden. You know, next up, Newark is the Prudential Center is a great building. They're very nice, and they always do a great job and everything, but it's getting close. Hopefully, possibly, they've been doing a lot of work this week with it and everything, but no offense against the people of Newark, New Jersey, or the Prudential Center, but you know what? I'm ready now for the next time I travel up to that area for one of those fights to be in Madison Square Garden. If the legislature of New York State can actually pull their heads out of their butts, and I'm really hoping that, you know, Mark Ratner and everybody else who's been involved in trying to get, on the UFC side at least, trying to get MMA legalized in New York when it comes to the Toronto show, that they immediately turn around the day after that show takes place, get in cars, take a plane, take a helicopter, and get to Albany, New York, and say, we just pulled a $13 million gate out of Toronto. We are already telling you we will run Buffalo at the HSBC Center. We will run Madison Square Garden every single year. Look at the tax money that's being made. Look at everything that goes around this. Reconsider.
Speaking of that show, there was a very interesting about-face by Dana White last night at the press conference. After Anderson Silva did a front kick to knock out, and actually we should talk about the rise of karate, the return of karate to UFC after the last couple of nights. John Jones with all of these front kicks and side kicks and spinning elbows, it was something to see. But regardless, after Vitor Belfort got front kicked to death by Anderson Silva, I was there at the press conference after the show that night, and Dana White flat out said, if GSP beats Jake Shields, he's moving up, and we're doing that fight. GSP versus Anderson Silva. Last night, 180. No guarantee that fight's going to happen. He's not talked to either man. He said he's gotten about 30 people asking him about the possibility of John Jones versus Anderson Silva. He says that's not anywhere in the near future. Silva does not want to move up. GSP has done interviews strongly indicating of late he has no desire to move up. And it looks like one of the big fights of 2011 that people had been talking about, perhaps the biggest UFC fight of all time, may not be happening.
And I'd be fine with that. To be honest, I mean, if the fight was going to happen, I would say, you know, all right, it's got to be in Dallas. You might as well go all out as much as you possibly can to do that. In the same way that they're doing in Toronto. But Anderson Silva, I mean, it's arguable that he should be fighting at 205 and not 185. I mean, I was there when he wiped through Forrest Griffin, and because of how he is built, and I don't think people realize this too. I mean, even though St. Pierre has been putting on good muscle and has been building his size up over the last year, with that said, take a side-by-side view of Anderson Silva and George St. Pierre. I mean, for a for a freak show fight or a, you know, there's nothing else to do type of fight, I'm fine with it. But with that said, I mean, you can do some damage to St. Pierre if he does lose that fight. You can do some damage to Silva if TSP wins. I know that's obviously not, if Silva's damaged, it's not a priority as much as it is if TSP is. But with Strikeforce and with some of the other things, you don't have to rush into that fight. So I'm actually completely fine with it not happening. It's just the drawback to that is, obviously, Silva being a dominant champion, GSP being a dominant champion, who do they fight next? Although, even saying that, though, the way Khael Sonnen, for 4.5 rounds, really stuck it to Anderson Silva, I mean, there's enough chinks in the armor where you can have enough fights with him. It's just after Sonnen, you're going to start running out of guys for him as well. So, as much as I don't mind the super fight happening, I only really want it to happen when it makes sense, either time-wise or because you've run out of opponents. You know, if they're going to say, hey, look, we're definitely going to be in Dallas this year, I would probably go ahead and put that show together. But since it doesn't look like they're going to, they have Sweden to worry about this year. They still haven't even officially announced that they're going to be in Philadelphia in August. I mean, because of all the other things they have going on, I'm completely fine with waiting.
On the pro wrestling front, we should probably talk about Mr. Jeff Hardy. For those of you, we were talking last week, obviously, about the TNA pay-per-view, and our show went off the air right before that show went on the air. TNA then proceeded to produce one of the worst pay-per-views of all time. And Dave and I actually had an argument on Observer Radio about whether this was, in fact, the worst pay-per-view of all time. We could not remember one worse, but we presume there had to have been one. And I do remember there was a show that was so bad that I actually called my cable company and asked for a refund. And they denied me, but I tried. I didn't do that for this.
Sean Mill and Jenna, wasn't it?
I think that might have been it. That might have been it. But regardless,
I don't even know what that pay-per-view was called anymore. I just remember Sean Mill and Jenna, and I just remember wanting to punch my TV.
It was god-awful. Now, what happened on this show, everyone, was, first off, they had a bunch of horrible matches. I think I gave 4 matches on this show negative stars, which actually may be a record now that I think about it. So the main event was supposed to be Jeff Hardy versus Sting. And what happened was, with a good 40 minutes till the top of the hour, Jeff Hardy came out, stumbled his way to the ring, Sting came out, and before the match began, Eric Bischoff came out. And Eric got in the ring, he talked off mic to both guys briefly, he cut a rambling promo where he couldn't just spit out what he was trying to spit out, which was that this match was no disqualification, which in the end led to nothing. And the match began, the bell rang, Jeff Hardy teased throwing his t-shirt to all four corners, wasting like an entire minute and 10 seconds. And then when they finally locked up, Sting punched him in the gut, or kicked him in the gut, gave him a couple chops, and then hit a scorpion death drop and pinned him. And that was the end of the match. And the show went off the air about 20 minutes early. And everybody was like, what the heck just happened? Well, what happened was, apparently Jeff Hardy showed up at the building. He was totally fine. He got together with Sting. They went over their match. They had all of their little spots planned. And Sting was supposed to win. And then Jeff vanished. And when they found him, he was, as they say in wrestling, allegedly in no condition to perform. Now, you, the listener, and I, and Mike, think about this for, I don't know, 1 second, and I'm sure you can come up with a solution to this problem involving some of the other people on this show. Perhaps say that Jeff Hardy was knocked out backstage and he's being replaced tonight by Kurt Angle or AJ Styles or Madison Rayne. Anybody! That's not what they did. They threw him out there on national television in this state, and they did a 1 minute match, and they pinned him, and they went off the air. Jeff Hardy has since been sent home. He has not been fired. Now, keep in mind, in December, Jeff Hardy showed up at a pay-per-view, and they were so concerned with his behavior that they nearly stripped him of the title and took him off the show. But in the end, Jeff claimed, oh, I'm just exhausted, I had a Middle East tour, I haven't had any sleep, I'm fine, and so they let him wrestle. So this was the second time in 3 months that something like this had happened. And instead of firing him, they have sent him home. And their plan, I swear to God, is to bring him back as a baby face. As a good guy! Mike, what are your thoughts on this disaster?
Let's see how this has gone from over the years. We've had Jeff Hardy be in no condition to perform. How many times now with TNA? Or being out of it, how many times? I mean, they put the title on him when he's under indictment. He still had court cases coming up, and it just, one thing after another, which we've talked about a million times on the show. Now, what's getting me about this is, it's twofold. One, they haven't fired him. Why? He has ruined or screwed up three or four pay-per-views in the entire, two or three times that he has been in with the company. So that's bad enough as it is. And frankly, the guy doesn't need to be working anywhere. He needs to be going to get help. Flat out, period. They can pay for it. If they don't want to fire him, that's fine. Take him off the roster and say, look, we will pay for you to go to care, or we will basically pay for you to get better. That's number one. Number two, how hard is this? I mean, you had a number one contenders match. You could have had those two, which would have actually killed two birds with one stone, because it would have gotten out that craptastic match and craptastic finish that Anderson and RVD had anyway. If you had, all three of them together, they have that coming up for the next pay-per-view anyway. That's not going to be a good match as it is, but you know what? You could have gotten out of it with Jeff Hardy that way if you just would have changed. You could have done a million and one things, and that's, I think, the biggest issue is, how hard is this? I think you brought it up this week when it came to OVW and Jim Cornette, as far as they would screw with him constantly by changing things and bringing other guys up and changing their gimmicks, and he'd have to make chicken salad out of chicken ass, which that's just what pro wrestling is. From over the years, guys no-show, they get sick, the flights get canceled, things happen. You rebook on the fly. It's not that difficult, and it shows you how piss poor their creative is, and it's really sad because, Vince Russo's the only one in charge of writing that show. Vince, how long have you been doing this where that swerve, that thing that happened, you can't change anything? You have how much time? I don't care. Even if Kurt Angle wasn't there, there had to be somebody else who wasn't wrestling on the show who could have actually been on there and wrestled in that match in its place. There's just a million and one things you could have done, and they didn't do it, and it's just pathetic. It's absolutely, this whole situation, Hardy signing and everything that went around it anyway, has been pathetic. The fact that the guy cannot obviously stay clean when he had another extension put onto his sentencing, even during that time, that's pathetic. And the fact that they can't book professional wrestling or can't book anything. I mean, say John Jones hurt his knee last night. I guarantee you Dana White would have done some make good somehow in some way to the crowd in New Jersey, even if it's pulling two guys out of the crowd to fight in the cage. You're telling me you couldn't do that when you had a little bit of time to get it ready? These guys, and it's not just Russo either. It's Bischoff, it's Hogan. I mean, how long have these guys been doing this? How many years have they been doing this where you could not come up for, you couldn't, for this one thing, you couldn't do it? It boggles my mind. And it's really, it's sad, and I do feel bad for Jeff Hardy because of his obvious issues that he has. But, seriously, it's kind of out of patience, and there's no one to blame here but TNA because they keep letting it happen to themselves. I mean, why should Jeff Hardy change? Why should anybody change when it doesn't matter what happens with that company? There's no ramifications. There's nothing. There's nothing.
That was a heck of a rant, and it took us right to the break. We'll be right back. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. Full of dander, Mike Sempervivi, also here from WrestlingObserver.com. Here talking about pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for over an hour. Another hour here on Sports Byline USA, Sirius Channel 125, worldwide on the internet. We've been talking about the Jeff Hardy situation in TNA, showing up in no condition to perform. Very quickly, just wanted to mention Jeff Hardy's, his well, basically his history in wrestling over the last couple of years. His first WWE stint about 5 years ago ended when they asked him to go to rehab, and he refused, and so he was fired. He was immediately hired by TNA, showed up in TNA, worked there for, I don't know, a year or so. I forget the exact time frame, but then there was a pay-per-view he was scheduled on, and no-showed. Didn't show up at the pay-per-view. They actually fired him, believe it or not. So WWE then hired him back. Went back to WWE, and when his contract expired with WWE and he did not renew, about a week later, he was indicted on drug trafficking charges, at which point TNA hired him, and he was given the championship. He's been the champion the entire time he's been under indictment. They've been waiting. He's had several hearings, all of which have been continued. The next one comes up April 20th. I believe his most recent hearing was in the middle of last week, and I guess they are waiting for some lab tests to come back from 18 months ago, and I guess the judge just, I think the side that was waiting for the results said it was going to be like 2 or 3 months, and the judge was like, seriously, we can't get these back in a month. And he basically ruled they needed to be back in a month because that's when the next hearing was going to be. So the judge is sick of continuances. He wants to get this thing all wrapped up. So I can't even say presumably. I just presume it's going to be continued forever. But they're hoping it will be wrapped up again last month. So that is the Ballad of Jeff Hardy, everybody. And again, TNA is going to bring him back as a babyface after what just happened at the last pay-per-view. So I don't know what to make of this. Well, I do know what to make of this.
A bunch of dummies. That's what you make of it.
Mike, hold on. We're out of time. I know you've got a lot in you. We'll get more when we come back. Hour two in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. And in your neck of the woods last night, Mike, in fact, you could have gone for part of the show, ROH, new ROH champion crowned, Eddie Edwards beat Roderick Strong to win the title in what was actually a pretty big surprise. And any thoughts on Ring of Honor? Have you had a chance to watch much of it lately? And thoughts on Eddie Edwards as champion?
Yeah, I have indeed, and I am completely fine with Eddie Edwards, and I like Roderick Strong a lot. I mean, I've interviewed him before. He's a good guy, a nice guy. And in a way, it was a good time because of the flux that was going on with Ring of Honor, obviously, with Tyler Black becoming Seth Rollins and FCW, and there were a lot of things going on at the time where I was like, you know what, let's give Roddy a shot. He was, to me, the wrong guy. I like him a lot, but he doesn't. And Truth Martini, they did try to add a little bit of addition there, and Truth has been a great... I'm not a huge fan of his, but as far as being a manager that gets involved physically, you know, he did a very good job, but it's just... I don't know. I don't want to sound negative, like, well, you know, he wasn't the guy to hold the strap for Ring of Honor or anything like that. I mean, they took a chance on it. To me, it didn't really work because he doesn't come across as the guy, I would say, as a dominant champion. And I just, and again, nothing against him at all, except for me, it really wasn't working all that well. And so I'm completely fine with making this move. I really am.
And Edwards, you find to be a fine representative for the championship.
For right now, yes. Now, I don't, you know, again, I can't look into the future of my magic ball because, well, I'm on the road. I don't have it right now. But I don't know how long he's going to hold on for the belt with the belt for. But I think because, I, again, and I could be wrong about this, I don't follow ROH boards or really any a whole lot of message boards or anything like that. So I don't know what the thought of it is. But at least as far as the ROH fan base goes, that was so American Wolves heavy, and they love, you know, they love...
Actually, I got to cut you off right there. We got to head to break. We'll talk about that when we come back. Observer Live, Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next hour. And Mike was talking about Eddie Edwards as ROH champion before we went to break. I rudely cut him off, so Mike, continue.
Oh, God, not at all. No, I just think that with the fan base, I mean, I have a feeling it'll be going to somebody else a little bit down the line here, although we'll see. I mean, if Eddie Edwards is able to take the ball and run with it and people really get behind him. But I think it's just, it's going to be better for the ROH fans, too, because I'm not sure how many of them really got behind Roderick either. And it's just, I think for just, you had to put it on somebody different. You were running out of options as far as, you know, guys who couldn't get another title shot as long as he held the title. So it will give the ability for other guys to go back and get shots at the ROH title, too, Homicide and guys like that, where, you know, they'll have another chance at it. And again, for something different for the time being, I think it's a good idea.
Well, the one thing is, I was just surprised because I thought, okay, let's just put it on Davey Richards and be done with it. But, pardon me there.
But everybody wants to see that. Everybody feels as though that's going to come anyway. So it's one of those things where if you go ahead and put it on Roderick right now, that's like, okay, but then
you mean Davey?
People aren't going to look for Roddy to lose it either for a while.
Davey.
I mean, I'm sorry, brain locking here for Davey Richards to lose it for a while.
So you choked on your brain and I choked on my own breath.
A fine Sunday it is here at Wrestling
Observer
Live.
A money segment here on Observer Live. I was just going to say that, you know, at first I was like, why don't you put the belt on Davey and get it over with? But then, obviously, this sets up the future battle of the Wolves for the championship, and there's a lot of ways they can go with that, so we'll see. It works.
And they're going to be off TV here soon, too. I mean, it's only what's going to be March where they're going to be off TV. So it's, again, back to really with DVD sales and with the iPay-per-views and things like that. You need people to buy those. So, yeah, I mean, to build up to that is going to be a far better idea.
Next week on Raw, a lot of things being talked about. I guess we'll see what they end up doing. Rock on his Twitter has noted that he is going to be live at Raw next week. Not apparently a video deal or anything like that, but he's going to be live there at the Go Home show. And also on that show, there are, at least as of yesterday, the idea was that Triple H was going to have a match. He was going to wrestle a match there on the Go Home show. And what are your thoughts on both of those things, as opposed to waiting to see both men for the first time live, or at least the next time, at WrestleMania? They're giving it to us, at least something, for free on Raw next Monday.
Well, as far as Triple H goes, I haven't looked at results recently, so I don't know on any house shows or anything like that if he's actually wrestled. And it's not like he'd be super out of shape, or it's not like he can't be at the gym or somewhere, you know, working in the ring. But yeah, it's probably a good idea to be back out there, live camera, live crowd, all that sort of stuff, and for him to have a match. And again, you know, God knows he could have a match with Yoshitatsu that lasts 30 seconds and it's over and done with anyways, you know. But as far as just the thought of him going back in the ring, yeah, it's probably a good idea that he actually does. And it's probably going to obviously build to an angle later on, you know, that night, if not, you know, immediately when the match takes place. So I'm cool with that. And as far as The Rock goes, yeah, it's probably about time that he's actually there live. They didn't do a very good job, and I don't know if that was intentional or not. I think it was a little bit of both as far as kind of always teasing that, you know, we're going to hear from The Rock tonight, and he ended up being via satellite, or they did what they did last week with The Miz. So, you know, again, for the go-home show at WrestleMania, yeah, it's probably a really good idea that The Rock is there.
Hunter has been wrestling. He actually did the Madison Square Garden house show last night. He did a street fight with Sheamus. And also on that show, Alex Riley, who I think lost quickly to the Great Khali, if I recall. I can't remember who killed him in 2 seconds. But Riley came out, and I guess they're going to be doing a deal on Raw. He said he had petitioned the GM. Actually, when he first came out, he said, I know I'm fired, but I'm here. Which, A, why do you bother? And I guess he said he'd petition the GM for a match on Raw where if he wins, he gets rehired as Miz's second, which, B, why do they even bother?
Does he still have a briefcase? Maybe he's got something very, very valuable in that briefcase that he continues to carry around with, but I don't know what that really means for The Miz either, because I think The Miz can stand on its own. And I mean, I like Alex Riley a lot, but if you're going to be booted like everybody else has seemed to be by Randy Orton back to Florida, why not just go to Florida for a while? You know, I'm cool with Riley being back. Riley being so closely associated with The Miz, I don't again, I, you know, it's a cool combination because I actually like the two together. I think they play off of each other very good. With that said, if I'm, you know, from the Miz's point of view, Miz doesn't need Alex Riley hanging around.
No. Alex Riley has go-away heat to me with Miz because he is always, I mean, we talked about this ad nauseum. I don't need to get into it again, but Miz needs all the help he can get. You know, we haven't mentioned this yet, but last week's Raw, and again, I've ranted about this for a week, so I'm not going to go into it here, but I will just quickly mention that last week's overrun with The Miz and John Cena actually lost a quarter of a million viewers. And to lose viewers in the overrun is pretty much impossible, but they managed to do it. And, I mean, I have my ideas why. Those being related to Miz, particularly in the earlier part of that show, being treated like a joke in a match with the great Khali. I mean, he needs all the help he can get, and they're not giving it to him, even though I think they are, but they're not. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Well, they think about that a lot, and there's the other thing with The Rock actually being there live. We haven't gotten any actually face-to-face Miz, and granted, Miz has been... Forget about the third wheel on this thing. He's been, you know, like the wheel that's actually flat that you're using as a spare in the trunk. I mean, he's been treated like in this whole lead-up to WrestleMania. So if nothing else, even though it probably won't go well for The Miz, at least we actually get The Miz, The Rock, and Cena actually all there at one time.
You know, actually, before I get into this, I'll just ask you, what would you do with Rock next week? I mean, would you have one of them lay him out? Would you have him lay one of them out? I think...
I would actually have them both, to be honest with you, because he's going to be on, if I'm not mistaken, he's going to be on the Raw after WrestleMania. Now, he has made, and I've been talking about this, I have a feeling that there's going to be this Monday night hangover after WrestleMania anyway because of what they've done. I would actually have them both actually lay him out and then have The Miz lay out Cena, to be honest with you. But I think that's the strongest thing you could possibly do because... I mean, again, Cena has come off looking like a joke and all of this stuff, and unless you're going to tweak his character a little bit away from being so kid-orientated, which he's great at, and he does a great job doing his role, even though for most of us he comes across as very geeky too often. I mean, Cena has looked like a joke. Miz has looked like a bigger joke in all of this, so I would have both The Miz and the Cena actually lay Rock out somehow if he is going to be there the day after WrestleMania anyway, and then have The Miz do something dominant to John Cena where he is standing there on his own as, you know, hey, I'm in the, basically, not the main event of WrestleMania, but as far as most people are concerned, I'm in the main event of WrestleMania, I deserve to be there, and this is why you should be spending $54.95 to watch me.
I just don't know about the idea of, I think he's got to be there live again. It feels like they've been teasing it and kind of promising it for so long that you sort of have to deliver at some point. But
Brian, I'll say this. If they, now, because I thought, like, they could do something where they, Cena kept saying he was for the fans and The Rock could make fun of him and The Rock could always say he was there via satellite or do something where you're kind of healing The Rock a little bit, and that way it wouldn't make John Cena look so bad. It just, they obviously haven't gone that direction, and then they're not going to go that direction. Now, if I just, and obviously the week, you know, the Monday before WrestleMania, they definitely won't do that, but I think they had a way out of that, because initially I don't think that the backlash was, they thought was going to be that strong of The Rock not being there.
They
and
should
even
have
when
known.
He was via satellite in Buffalo.
They should have known.
I just think that
WrestleMania is about paying to see the confrontation, and I don't really, I mean, personally, I wouldn't have any sort of physical confrontation on the go-home Raw. I mean, to me, that's WrestleMania, and I also think it's really weird that Rock is promising he's going to be there the show before Mania, and then they've already announced he's going to be there the show after Mania, so it's almost like, why would you tell people you don't have to buy Mania to see The Rock again? It's really... I guess we'll just see where they go here, but I kind of question that decision right there. And when we come back, we'll talk about the possibility of a match, because there is some news on that front. So that's coming up here in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Talking The Rock, WrestleMania, Miz, A lot of ranting being done, obviously. But one interesting thing about The Rock is he did an interview the other day, and he did not flat out say, I will do another match. But he suggested he was open to the possibility, which is a big 180 from what he posted on his Facebook about a month ago, where he said he would never have another match again. And I don't know if maybe he showed up and he didn't realize how badly people wanted to see him and Cena in a match. Or if they just said, you know, here's the money we'll offer you, my friend, for a match with John Cena. But he suggested that perhaps one day he would have to bust that gear out again. And I don't know if that's just hype for WrestleMania, what the deal is. But it is something that they have wanted to do. They have talked about the idea of Rock versus Cena at SummerSlam. And if that's the case, you know, you could set it up. I guess I don't know what you do here, because he is going to show up on the Raw after WrestleMania. What does that mean? Does that mean he's going to lay Cena out at WrestleMania and then Cena lays him out on Raw and then we don't see Rock for 6 months? It's kind of weird for them to build up the match starting in on the Raw after Mania, but then you're not going to deliver it till SummerSlam, at which point, you know, what are you going to do in the meantime that people are going to care about? I can't imagine them doing it at Backlash. A lot of questions here. A lot of questions.
Yeah, I guess, you know, the one option would be that, you know, okay, you know, Miz gets the advantage, and it's both The Rock and Cena beating off the Miz on Monday night, and then we get time for Mania. Let's just say Cena wins, The Rock turns around, Rock bottoms them, and then you can do something on Monday, although... For some reason, the Monday after WrestleMania screams that it's going to be an Austin Rock, you know, feel-good face-to-face. Austin's going to be there to hype up Tough Enough anyway, so I foresee something like that. But, I mean, it's not because of The Rock and because of the ability to do promos and the fact that all he's got would have to do is pop up like a Muppet once in a while on Raw. I think you could actually keep that thing going to SummerSlam if you had. But then again, so what do you do with Cena in that time to basically interweave the Rock in there until that time happens? So, I mean, it's not impossible that they could do that, but it does require them to now go and think a whole lot further down the road, which they don't do anyway, much less seemingly after WrestleMania as it is. So, yeah, I mean, it is a big crapshoot right now.
Question here about this. This is from The Den. Says, are you getting the gut impression there's something with the Cena character on the back end of this Rock thing? You referenced the Class A burials that Rock's been doing of Cena lately. How Cena's been painted now as the guy who failed to fill Rock and Austin's shoes to their level. Rock clearly seems to be coming off more as the babyface of the audience. What impression are you taking from where this ends for Cena? What are your thoughts?
Look, it's not going to be Cena as the bad guy because... there's no way. There's no other. I know Randy Orton is, you know, gets cheered. Probably, I don't know, he's probably the second most popular guy in the company. But, I mean, Cena has got to still be the good guy and everything. But I can see a dulling of the soft, a dulling of the character as far as being so kid-orientated where he brings back some of that old chain gang sort of, you know, the hip-hop John Cena, or there's a little bit more of an edge to his act, but because I think you're going to have to do that because he's been treated as such a geek of, you know, you can't see me and all that sort of stuff that, you know, and kids obviously love them some John Cena. Mine's an example of it. I mean, they love John Cena, but you, to me at this point, no matter what, you're going to have to harden the edge a little bit on John Cena. I don't know how they feel still about PG and all that stuff. They've seemed to push the envelope a little bit. They need John Cena to do the same thing. Not in words as far as vulgarity or any of that sort of stuff goes, but as far as approach goes, because, again, they would be idiots to turn John Cena heel, especially because there would be no one to fill his space in the up top anyway.
I mean, the idea was that Cena was going to be a babyface in this whole deal, and it's not working. Maybe they underestimated...
It's their own fault.
They underestimated how good The Rock actually was, or overestimated how good they could write for John Cena. I think that's probably more of the problem, to be honest with you.
That was, yeah, I think more of the issue, because that whole, like, I'm going to hit you with the death blow, you know, response. And, you know, in hindsight, when I watched it live, I thought it was awful. When I saw it again, it's like, you know what, it didn't really bother me as much. I thought it was pretty good, but considering it was supposed to be delivered as the death blow, it did an awful job.
This person says, is Lucha Libre USA ever coming back to TV? They had a season finale, then the return kept getting pushed back. I haven't heard anything about them coming back to TV. Follow them on Facebook. They're still touring. They even have action figures in stores. Wasn't the best wrestling out there, but at least in an hour TV show, you got more wrestling than promos and backstage stuff. I'm not sure what the future is for Lucha Libre USA. I haven't heard anything about a new television outlet or anything like that. So
They'll be back. If that was on MTV, correct?
I believe that was the MTV show. There was like Masked Warriors. There's Lucha Libre USA. I have not followed them as I probably should have.
Yeah, I can't recall. I know for sure a second season is in the process. It's been kind of quiet because I'm trying to think of what the deal was behind MTV. They haven't announced when it's going to be on, but a second season is supposed to be coming. I just don't know when.
Well, I'm still waiting for
By the way, in that time, watch NWA Hollywood. It's not a bad hour to go.
I'm still waiting for the next season of Impact, so that's the only problem with, that theory.
But a second season of Impact?
Yeah, remember there was a season finale of Impact, or I'm sorry, of Nitro?
Oh, God, that's right, yes.
Yeah. So I don't know, everybody. We'll just hope they return. How did I possibly get Nitro and Impact screwed up?
Oh, yeah. It's just unfathomable, isn't it?
It really is. Let's see. Since the WWE Hall of Fame is airing on USA the night after WrestleMania instead of the night before, does WWE still plan on having strict time limits for everyone involved, or are they just going to let people talk this year? I'd hate it if Shawn Michaels was only given 10 minutes. 10 minutes? Try 4 minutes for the Funk Brothers. That's what they got last year, a couple of years ago.
And that's for both of them.
That's for both of them, exactly. I don't know what they're going to do, but I would expect Sean will get some time to talk. That's all I would say there. I can't imagine Shawn Michaels being up there and then putting up that giant clock. I guess it's possible, but I don't know.
It's possible, but what are the odds he would actually adhere to it anyway? Not going to happen.
This person says, will Zuffa UFC let Paul Daly go if he doesn't win the Strikeforce fight they advertised during UFC 128? I think the bigger question is Paul Daly even going to do that fight? I mean, Paul Daly's under contract, so it depends on what his Strikeforce contract says. You know, if his Strikeforce contract is for 3 more fights and they don't have a clause where you can cut him after a loss, I mean, he'll be there. I mean, right now, the Strikeforce contracts, I mean, they have to be honored. They're contracts. So, again, the big question is whether or not he even takes that fight, because he's hemming and hawing about, do I want to make money for Dana White? And, I don't know, like he thinks that him fighting is going to just bring in tons of money for Strikeforce or something like that. I don't know. But I think that's the bigger question.
Well, when they released Paul Daly, I thought it was a little bit of a jump of a gun. In doing that. But with that said, with Paul Daly's comments that have come out over, why don't I just stay home and fight for Bama? That to me is mind-boggling. One, he shouldn't have said anything in the first place. Two, he continues to talk. So it's like, you know, he's digging himself a hell of a grave. It's not about making money for Dana White. And actually, yes, it is. Yes, the UFC is going to make money off of you fighting. With that said, unless money is not an issue to you and you want to fight for free or you want to fight for a lot less in Bama, apparently he says he makes some good money there. That's great and everything. You're fighting for yourself. You're fighting for your family and that security. And there's only X amount of dollars you're going to be able to make anywhere else in the world. So I wouldn't be throwing too many fits when it came to the UFC over, I don't want to make any money for Dana White. Well, who do you want to make money for then? Well, why don't you think about yourself?
There's some fighters that don't think. So I throw
that
out there.
Yeah, there's plenty of them. It's just amazing that, and again, we talked about this last week too, when it comes to, you know, as far as the pay scale for guys goes, and there's less options. Managers, handlers, trainers, guys who are closer to these fighters need to start getting a lot better as far as negotiating money, but also when it comes to public relations.
Yuji Nagata won the New Japan Cup, just wrapped up a little while ago there. He is the a winner over Shinsuke Nakamura. And any thoughts on that?
I'm always a big Nagata guy, and on the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, both Adam Summers and I have kind of not that we thought he would win, but we were kind of hoping he would, because really the New Japan winner gets a title match. Is the only thing that really comes out of that deal, and Yuji Nagata has been a big fan of his for a very long period of time, and he's always good for no matter what match he's in. So I think it's a good idea, because at least you're going to get a really good pay-per-view match or big show match out of him that people are going to like. So I'm completely fine with that move. This is still not the G1. That's the most important thing coming up this year in August. So as far as a filler going into summer, I think it's a good idea, because it's a guaranteed good title defense.
Which brings us to this question. Can you remember the last time a huge Japanese star came to WWE and actually received a decent push? No disrespect to Yoshitatsu. But other than Taka Michinoku, I can't think of anybody. Any chances of a name like Tanahashi ever going to WWE?
You know, the last time that Tanahashi had a picture taken, he was with Jeff Hardy, and it went up on the WWE.com website as Jeff Hardy with a big fan. So I always thought that was ridiculous. I mean, in a way, Ultimo Dragon got one until they realized they had Ultimo Dragon. But the vignettes and everything leading into that was probably as good of a push as, you know, a Japanese-based guy had gotten in a while. But I can't. It hasn't been since, I don't think, Tenryu and Katao came in to beat Demolition at WrestleMania. I can't think of a guy who has been, you know, solely a Japanese competitor that's gotten a push in a long, long time. Tanahashi would be great for the company, would be great for WWE. Not a chance that they would actually use him in the way that they should.
Jeff Hardy and a friend.
Jeff Hardy and a big fan.
Oh, a big fan, yes. That reminds me of a story that I'm going to tell when we come back from the break. It's a great story. It tells you everything you need to know about WWE in 2011. It's coming up next. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And for the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. Daily news updates, show reviews, recaps, and radio shows. Tons of radio shows. In fact, we do 15 to 20 radio shows every single week. So if you love this show and it's the only one you get a chance to hear every week, you are missing out. It's only $10.99 per month. With that fee, you not only get all of the brand new radio shows from myself, Dave Meltzer, Mike, all of our other great correspondents covering pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, the history of pro wrestling and MMA, interviews, and more, but you get our full archives dating back to 2005. That is 6 years worth of programs available at your fingertips. Thousands and thousands of hours, tens of thousands of hours, in fact, thousands of radio shows. Interviews some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling. Bret Hart, Ric Flair, Steve Austin, million different guys. I actually should get a list someday and go over all of them. Bryan Danielson before he got started with WWE. The list goes on and on. Oliver Humperdinck, who passed away today. I'm going to be putting that show up later on, free for everybody to listen to. All of that available at WrestlingObserver.com if you sign up. New shows, archived shows, all for the same price. So check it out. If you scroll down the right-hand side of WrestlingObserver.com, you can check out a list of our latest three free radio shows. Click on the link. Download them. They're free. They're MP3s. Put them on your iPod, wherever you listen to your music, and check them out. If you like what you hear, sign up. You get a lot more. You won't regret it. If you like this show, you will not regret signing up. I pretty much guarantee that. Mike, WWE superstars, if WWE terms this like they did with NXT, the second show to ever successfully move from television to the internet, it's been canceled by WGN. What does this mean?
It's amazing that I cannot fathom why they still have NXT on, outside of the fact that, you know, during the first week, it was really actually nice to hear William Regal on commentary, trying to watch some of that stuff. But, Superstars obviously is an internet thing. That's completely fine with me. I mean, we joked about last week about the epic Chris Masters and Tyler Rex feud that's been going on there. But, you know, for foreign markets, it's good. For guys, because there's no old-time feeder system or anything like that, I mean, they get to work on TV and be in front of live crowds, and, you know, the show is good. To me, I didn't want them to cancel it altogether, because it is good to basically having opening act. you know, leading into Raw and leading into SmackDown. It's good to have a couple of matches. And instead of them just having dark matches, you know, for guys like Tyler Rex, it was a good idea to have them work out in front of cameras and all that sort of stuff. So the fact that it's going to continue on is good. It just still boggles my mind more that NXT actually still has a heartbeat.
I got to tell this story. This is something else. Who went into the Hall of Fame last week on Raw, Mike? Who was the new inductee?
The new inductee, Drew Carey, right?
That is correct, Drew Carey. Now, TV Week did a story on this, because of course WWE sent out a press release about Drew Carey going to the WWE Hall of Fame. TV Week did an article, and the headline was, Drew Carey inducted into Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. Huh? Drew Carey? That was the headline. So this guy wrote this article, I believe Chuck Ross was his name, wrote this article for TV Week, Drew Carey inducted into Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. And shortly thereafter, Kelly Baldiga, I believe is her last name, regardless, she's a WWE publicist, she wrote to Chuck and demanded they correct this story. She said in an email, "We are no longer a wrestling company, but rather a global entertainment company with a movie studio, international licensing deals, publisher of three magazines, consumer good distributor, and more." A very poorly written email, I might add, but this was sent from WWE. So he said he would call her the next day. And the next day, when he had not called, he got another email from her saying, "Chuck, did you mean call me today? I apologize, but I really need the correction made sooner than later if possible." Need the correction made. So he called her up and he said to her, "Your release says that Carey is being recognized as being an entrant in the 2001 Royal Rumble. I believe that was a wrestling event." At which point, Kelly, the WWE publicist, said, and I quote, "No, we don't do wrestling events. They're entertainments. And we don't call them wrestlers. They're superstars and divas. They are not wrestling events, Mike. They're entertainments."
You know, no matter how much they try to do things over the years, there's the little thing about, like, you know, we'll call it the sports entertainment bubble. There is still, as long as you have rings, you know, a ring with ropes and a mat and dudes in shorts, it's still going to be wrestling for almost everyone. In fact, why are you not then just changing the name to, you have enough money to do this now, World Sports Entertainment?
How
why?
About just World?
Why? And I don't know why she had to be so vociferous about the fact, that they had to change this immediately, that, you know, they're superstars and divas and all that nonsense. But just take the wrestling out completely then.
He noted that in a couple of weeks they are going to be presenting WrestleMania. And he noted that the name is World Wrestling Entertainment.
Exactly.
But this would not do for her. "Remove it," she said. "Remove it. Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame." So,
with all due respect to, if you were told like that to go, "No, you need to remove that," I would, it would probably push me to keep it even longer.
That's essentially what he said here. He cannot believe that they were trying to edit his story. Yeah. I love that line, though. "We don't do wrestling events. They're entertainments."
So it's going to be sports entertainmania? How does that work? Didn't they just have a DVD coming out called about, you know, the history of WrestleMania?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm just amazed that you know, that they're even using the term sports entertainment, because Vince doesn't like anything even sports related. They don't like the term belt. Don't you have championship belts in sports? Apparently not. You see, it's just titles.
Basically, do what Impact did this week. There was only, 9 minutes of wrestling? You could have eliminated that altogether and just have it like a comedy skit or a going to a play or something like that. Have a little platform with guys in the middle of the crowd doing something, and then just take out the turnbuckles and all of that other stuff. If it's not going to be wrestling, that's fine. Just don't be angry about the fact until you do all of these things, like, you know, taking away a ring, that people still call it wrestling.
Bill here in the comments section suggested they change the name to World Media Entertainment or just Worldwide Entertainment. So they go
that
back.
That would actually be, there you go. You don't have to change anything as far as logos or any of that. So Worldwide Entertainment actually, I can't believe I'm actually going to say this, Worldwide Entertainment actually then makes sense.
May as well. I guess Dave is going to have to change the name of the newsletter. We'll have to change the name of this show. Can't be Wrestling Observer Live anymore. It has to be like Entertainment Observer Live. Media Observer Live.
Media Observer Live.
Yeah. This person here says, do you think the signing of Sin Cara is seen as a long-term replacement for Rey Mysterio when he retires shortly? And do you think Rey will make the decision sooner rather than later now that the WWE is someone younger and ready to take a spot in the company? Obviously, this is a long-term replacement for Rey. Rey is not planning on retiring anytime soon. There were rumors a couple of weeks back that he had demanded his release, but that is not the case. And apparently he's happier now than he's been in a long time. Rey's problem with WWE of late has been that he is constantly trying to schedule vacations for himself and his family. And every time he ends up scheduling, say, a month off to go to Hawaii, they call him a week later and demand he come back because somebody got hurt or something like that. So, you know, if they actually had a Sin Cara running around and doing high spots and they didn't have to keep calling Rey back to come back from his Hawaiian vacation, I'm sure he'd be overjoyed.
And there's a lot to make fun of WWE about or criticize and things like that. I got to be honest, again, thus far as the vignettes and the teasers go, I mean, even down to the, as dumb as this sounds, even down to the logo that they have for him so far, they, at least to me, have done everything right when it comes to Sin Cara.
This person, speaking of Sin Cara, says, you and Dave keep repeating how much money WWE paid Mystico, now Sin Cara. I was wondering if they made a similar investment when they brought in Ultimo Dragon. No, they did not.
Not a chance.
And were they planning anything longer than a short-term run with Dragon? Actually, Stephanie thought that Ultimo Dragon was a very handsome man, and she wanted to unmask him. And that never happened, so.
Again, he was there because of the success of Ultimo Dragon. I don't know who actually made the decision to bring him in, but the vignettes were almost done the exact same way, where it was a flash of masks, and they use old footage of WCW and things like that. But he was going to be there to be a part of that cruiserweight mix. He was not going to be there to be basically what Sin Cara is, which is Rey Mysterio 2/superhero.
Yes. All right, let's see what else we've got here. The Miz, Conan O'Brien, is going to be there on March 23rd, along with Vanessa Hudgens, Grace Potter, and the Nocturnals. How about that?
Well, Vanessa Hudgens is cute enough. I'll watch for that.
Let's see here. With Dana, when Dana said he would make the fights people would want to see, why would you go immediately to title versus title? If I'm Dana, I want Fedor in there with one of my top guys. Fedor versus Verdum or Overeem would be great buys for a Strikeforce show, but Dana can make three times as much money off of him with a Randy or Shane Carwin fight. Any thoughts if that should be the priority or anything else?
I would not do title versus title across the board. I would just make fights that people want to see because, outside of the hardcore audience that's buying UFC, most people look at Strikeforce, they wouldn't know. They would say, oh, yeah, Ultimate Fighting or Cage Fighters or something like that. So you don't have to do title versus title, but if a fight just makes sense, no matter who it is, then you do the fight. I don't think you'd actually have to match up, man for man who it's going to be. Just who can you make the most money off of, the match you can make the most money off of. Because, realistically, outside of our world and the people listening to this show, the title versus title thing is not going to make any difference. This isn't the AFL and NFL merger. It's titles that, for the most part, nobody knows who holds them in Strikeforce, so it doesn't really matter.
This is actually an interesting question I don't know the answer to, but I'm sure I will in a few days. Is there any way ROH can work out a deal with GoFight Live to have their weekly TV shows broadcast there either for free or for a minimal fee? I remember Dave O'Brien saying it was near impossible for them to lose money with the deal they had with GoFight Live. I don't see the GoFight Live. I do see that GoFight Live has some free shows that they offer there as well. It's a good question. I don't know if GoFight Live would want to be airing their show weekly for free in the hopes that it would help build up a big pay-per-view.
They wouldn't. And I asked Dave Lagana about this the last time I talked to him on another show. Not as good as this one, of course, but I broached that subject to him. And it, I mean, with the cost involved, I mean, yes, it's not that much as far as doing it where you're going to get, you know, let's say 1,500 people to order the iPay-per-view. That's great. How many are going to do it on a consistent basis? I mean, they haven't closed the door on it, but as far as doing a subscription-type thing or something along those lines, it's possible. It's not going to happen, you know, anytime in the near future. It is possible, but it's not going to happen anytime soon.
And one more before the break. Is it possible Christian will be added to the world title match at Mania due to him winning clean on Del Rio on SmackDown? And do you see Christian ever winning a world championship? It's possible. I don't see it happening anytime soon. As far as WrestleMania, I have not heard anything about a three-way, but I was told a couple of days ago that in the next week, and that means this coming week, there may be a change to one of the matches on the show. So that is possible, and I guess we'll find out in a couple of days when they tape SmackDown. We'll be right back. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We're back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Wanted to mention before we go the sad death of Fabian El Gitano, CMLL wrestler down in Mexico. And I wish I could tell you more, but it's a really weird story. The initial reports were that he had apparently been murdered. There had been a scuffle in his home. There were beer bottles everywhere, and he had been killed. There were later reports that perhaps he had killed himself. And then there were some photos in the Record newspaper of his wake, and the story in the newspaper was that he had died of hemorrhagic pancreatitis, which is not murder or suicide. So it's a very strange story right now. He would have been the second wrestler murdered in Mexico, I believe, in the last year, and La Parquita was killed as well. Actually, a couple of the minis were killed. It's very... just been a very rough year, but again, we don't know really what happened yet. So we'll try and give you an update next week. But very strange. It's sometimes tough to get information out of Mexico, especially when the cause of death is changing repeatedly.
That is yeah, a very sad situation. Very, very bizarre too. Nothing against Mexico, but I wouldn't want to be in Mexico right now, except for sitting on Cancun on a beach, possibly.
And very quickly, the AAA CMLL head-to-head battle. Just wanted to mention very quickly that Super Porky did, in fact, get shaved. Him and his son, Maximo, lost to Terrible and Tejano in the main event of the Dos Leyendas show. Porky gets his head shaved all the time, so this was hardly news.
Doesn't he always get his head shaved?
Yes. And Extreme Tiger won Rey de Reyes in the AAA show as well. And that brings us to the end of this show. We are completely out of time. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Mike, as always. He made it back home safe, as you can hear now from his new voice on the telephone. We'll be back next week previewing WrestleMania, the final show before the biggest wrestling show of the year, and talking UFC in Seattle as well. So everybody take care. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks again for listening. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network.